Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, wee viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation. In the cheese covered post constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food born in the NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and, now the first family has a second dog. Isn't that sweet? Well, you would think Obama, as the consummate politician, would do what is politically correct at least once in a while. So what's up with Portuguese water dogs? Obama immediately opens himself up to criticism. Well, I don't know, from the likes of even Donald Trump, you know. Let's see the birth certificate. He was either born in Kenya or maybe Portugal, huh? But he wasn't born here. Or did Obama want a dog who speaks only Portuguese so he could get people in Brazil to hunt down Glenn Greenwald? No, Obama seems to want Portuguese water dogs because of his daughter's allergies. If Obama were really concerned about his daughter's allergies, he would stop feeding them cheese sandwiches. You know, perhaps like most people of color, most people, they are lactose intolerant, huh? Really, lactose intolerance is not a disease. I mean, why should we be able to digest the milk sugars of other species' baby food? We are not babies, and we are not other species. So it makes no sense to take two lactaids and call me in the morning, or in this case, take two Portuguese water dogs and call me in the morning. And what is he calling the new member of the family? Well, I thought that since the first dog's name, you know, is spelled B-O, I thought the new dog would be named MB, you know, like B-O, MB. Perfect for this president. Or would the new dog be named Drone or Droney? You know, I mean, then he could give a speech. You know, I have a drone, perfectly timed to coincide with Martin Luther King's speech from 50 years ago. Martin Luther King, whose wife, by the way, Coretta Scott King, and son Dexter eventually became vegans. They got it. But for those of us who do have a dream of no more killings of healthy, adoptable dogs and so-called shelters, Obama is Obummer once again. As millions die in shelters Obama buys from a breeder in Michigan. Long ago, when first becoming president, Obama promised that he would adopt. Well, why should that campaign promise be any different from most of his others, huh? Saying one more thing and doing another is great for politicians, of course, because then, you know, it lets them have it both ways. We talked last week about Bill Clinton being a vegan. Oh, what a cool guy. He's so 21st century. He's vegan because he doesn't eat fish. And in the same article, it says he eats fish and eggs. So, I don't know. He can have it both ways, an egg and fish-eating vegan. Maybe if you happen to notice the hypocrisy or inconsistencies, apparently everything can be fixed by throwing a little money at it, right? Isn't that what every tragedy requires, every crisis? Just throw some money at it. Obama can just say, hey, look, I made a donation to the Humane Society in Sonny's name. So everything should be fine, right? And by the way, to which Humane Society did Obama donate? I first saw reports that he donated to the Humane Society of the United States and that its CEO, Wayne Pacelli, thanked Obama for the donation in Sonny's name. And well, that would be the wrong Humane Society to which to make a donation. That would be a big mistake. But now I'm seeing other reports that he donated to the local Washington Humane Society. You know, the place, you know, from which he should have adopted. Yeah. And which is certainly a better choice for a donation than HSUS, which really has the public confused anyway, right? I mean, just with its name, the Humane Society of the United States. But by all means, do donate to your local humane societies or rescue groups who do the hands-on work with animals. Do not donate to the Humane Society of the United States or HSUS, which doesn't run shelters, you know, only scams, you know. I mean, you would be better off giving, just give money to Sarah McLachlan directly, okay, for you know, to, you know, if her record sales are down, maybe help her out, you know. I mean, and is she singing the tearjerker for HSUS on the Terror Vision set on those commercials, or, you know, in the middle of the night when, you know, you get all teary-eyed and run to get your checkbook, or are those ASPCA commercials, you know, both of which seem, you know, more interested in donations than adoptions, if you look at those commercials, you know, they need those donations to pay the six-figure salaries for the executives there running the places. So again, you are much better off donating to local shelters and rescue groups than HSUS or the ASPCA. And confusing the message even further, while, you know, the true animal activist advocates for never buying from breeders and pet stores and, you know, not supporting puppy mills and all, well, oddly enough, it's hard to believe, you know, and by the way, it's unimaginable that, you know, we couldn't find a rescue, one Portuguese water dog breed-specific rescue anywhere, huh, in the U.S. or Portugal or Brazil or any country, you know, that has water or waterboarding or, I don't know. I guess maybe Obama thought maybe it would be too depressing to go to a shelter, you know, it would be too much like Guantanamo or something. So anyway, HSUS, to confuse the issue even further, actually has a page on its website, how to buy from a responsible breeder. What? I thought all breeders were responsible, you know, for the mess that we have today with so many unwanted and homeless dogs. But there's that HSUS page. Well, you know, it's very, very strange to see, you know, the page at the top starts off saying, well, you've decided to get a dog. You've checked out the pure breed rescue group or an animal shelter for your breed and still haven't found the one, huh? Well, I would say keep looking with rescue groups and shelters, huh? But here's the HSUS page that, you know, then tells you to buy from a responsible breeder. And I do hope that that responsible breeder fully checked out the residence where Sonny was going and the family, you know, hope the family had to fill out a questionnaire. You know, there may be some serious freedom of bark issues, perhaps. You know, Sonny. I mean, listen to me, Sonny. If the first daughters are ever a little slow, you know, with the presidential pooper scooper, you know, in the Rose Garden, do not tell the president. Whistleblowers, go straight to the doghouse. Apparently for 245 dog years, if Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning is any example. And, you know, I don't suppose a past history of eating dog is grounds for disqualification, as Obama did in his youth in Kenya or Portugal or Hawaii or wherever, wherever Donald Trump says he was born. And ultimately, I don't know, really do hope that Obama did donate to a local humane society, not HSUS. It does seem like such a regular pattern, you know, to if you want to absolve yourself from the guilt of abusing animals, you know, but you still have a public image to uphold, you know, it seems like people do make that donation to HSUS so that your animal abuse can be acceptable to animal advocates, huh? You know, it worked for puppy killer Michael Vick, spokesperson for HSUS, so it certainly should work for a puppy buyer, right? I mean, this is the same HSUS that partnered with Iams Meat Dog Food that conducted experiments on dogs, the same HSUS that partnered with Eukanuba, both Iams and Eukanuba, subsidiaries of Procter & Gamble, the world's worst corporate vivisector. You know, remember HSUS with its revenues coming from Humane Choice dog food? Of course, not a vegan dog food. Anyway, just a reminder to animal abusers, if you still care about your public image, you have a friend at HSUS. As I said, it worked for United Egg Producers, Wolfgang Puck, Nebraska Farmers Union, and now with its new Farmer Outreach Facebook page, countless killers of pigs, chickens, and cows, you know. Look at that page. It, really, my blood starts boiling. You know, if I weren't a vegan, I'd have to worry about blood pressure the way HSUS is praising grass-fed beef. You know, beef doesn't eat. Cows eat. So a more honest observation would be flesh from /throat cows who are fed grass. Yeah. Shouldn't be sold to us as sustainable either. Grazing grass-fed cows produces 400% the methane of cows imprisoned on so-called factory farms. So factory farms are no good. Family farms are no good. Imagine more water being used for all of those cows instead of, you know, growing fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We're going to talk about fracking off the California coast, coming up with Emily Jeffers of the Center for Biological Diversity. Also, dinner for the San Francisco Vegetarian Society coming up, Dixie May coming up, the two chefs from there, and Gary Francione today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Trying to calm down now, you know, thinking about Obama. What a presidency, huh? And he can't even adopt a dog. Where I'm living now, we're up to three dogs. Two more rescues showed up at our door this week. So now we have Susie the poodle, Daisy the chihuahua, and the new dog who showed up today, Daisy the Chihuahua. Now there are two Daisies here, two Chihuahuas named Daisy. I feel like I'm living the Bob Newhart show life, you know? It's like, you remember Daryl and Daryl? Hi, I'm Daryl, and this is my brother Daryl. So I'll be walking them, and people will say, oh, what are your dog's names? Oh, this one's Daisy, and this one's Daisy. We ran out of creativity. We couldn't think of anything else, you know? So couldn't even think of another flower. It just had to be Daisy and Daisy. Coming up in a few minutes on today's program, well, I mean, we just recently learned in California that we are really getting fracked over and over and over again, fracking off the California coast. We'll be talking about that with Emily Jeffers of the Center for Biological Diversity. And coming up next hour, we'll talk about a celebration next Saturday, a dinner celebrating the 45th anniversary of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. And we will talk to the president of that society, Dixie May, next hour, along with the two wonderful chefs who will be catering Saturday's event, Miyoko Shinner and Lisa Brooks Williams, very popular, award-winning. And they'll be coming up along with animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. It was really great participating in the March for Animal Liberation yesterday in San Francisco with hundreds of others. I mean, it's really cause for great optimism to see and meet so many caring and articulate people, young and old, people really dedicated to really bringing about animal liberation. And we made stops along the way from U.S. Bank, which finances animal experimentation, to McDonald's, which, you know, I mean, like, you know, what's right with McDonald's? Where would I begin to talk about why we would stop and protest at McDonald's? Probably the most destructive company on the planet. And, you know, a threat to your children. We also stopped at the office of Senator Dianne Feinstein. Again, how many reasons do we need, you know? NSA Dianne Feinstein, who's an author of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. She's also a sponsor of that horrible egg bill from the United Egg Producers and the Humane Society of the United States. And she supported Pound Seizure. Yes, Dianne Feinstein supported, you know, if Daisy gets lost and winds up in a pound, oh well. If she winds up as an experiment in a lab, oh well, right? So that's our wonderful senator, our liberal senator. But I do think a lot of great activism will come of yesterday's gathering. And by the way, then we carpooled down to San Jose for a Ringling Brothers protest. And I also met some organizers of an event. Well, it really shows that elephants aren't just under attack by Ringling Brothers and the circus. It's that the ivory of elephants is so in demand that it looks like our, you know, beloved elephants could be totally extinct within 10 years. If the poaching continues at the rate that it is, and it's really horrible. This is the largest vegan on the planet, the largest herbivore, the elephant, and we do need to protect them. So there will be a march for the elephants in San Francisco on Friday, October 4th, starting at 11 a.m. at Portsmouth Square, which is 733 Kearney. So put that on your calendar if you can attend. The elephants are in real crisis, and we will be marching through Chinatown where ivory is for sale. I mean, so the extinction of the magnificent elephant will happen in 10 years for trinkets. So let's see what we can do. Let's see, there is a website. Where's the website? It's marchforelephantssf.org. marchforelephantssf.org. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and you have hundreds of free archives you can hear on the website, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Glad you can join us today. Very activist weekend for me. Can't believe we went down to San Jose yesterday and we didn't stop at Vegetarian House, but we had to get back up to, we went to Oakland to the Direct Action Everywhere house for a pizza party. But if you have the good fortune to be in the San Jose area, I do recommend you stop by Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street. It is a landmark restaurant. Even people, you know, who are pre-vegan love going there. And then they become less pre and more vegan by doing it, seeing that, you know, we have the best food, and Vegetarian House is 100% vegan, organic, non-GMO, and just a wonderful international menu, and raw food, real wonderful desserts. And Vegetarian House caters, by the way, and a lot of companies around Silicon Valley are taking advantage of that and having wonderful events, corporate events. If a wedding is in your near future, perhaps you'd like to have Vegetarian House cater it. The website is vegetarianhouse.us. Vegetarianhouse.us. Say hi to Sunny for me there. I guess Obama named his dog after, you know, the manager of Vegetarian House. So we are shocked. You know, there's an uproar in California right now. We just recently learned that fracking is going on off our coast. I think we thought it was some scary, unknown procedure happening far in the distance, nowhere near us, but right off our coast. Can you believe it? So today we're going to talk to Emily Jeffers, who is with the Oceans Program of the Center for Biological Diversity, where she is a staff attorney. She has a law degree from the University of California at Berkeley and a degree in biology from Yale University, and has worked as a wildlife biologist in California and Idaho. Welcome, Emily. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us today. So, well, first of all, we're all shocked that fracking is happening off the coast, but could you give us a little idea of what fracking is and why people are concerned? Why are environmentalists concerned? And now in the government there's concern. Tell us a bit about fracking, could you, please?
Sure. I agree that everyone is concerned, and it's concerning because it's an inherently dangerous process where these oil and gas companies are injecting huge quantities of water, sand, and toxic chemicals into the earth in order to cause fissures, which then allow them to extract oil and gas. And once those toxic chemicals, that slurry of toxic sludge, is injected into the earth, about 80% of it comes back and then has to be dealt with. And that's usually dealt with by injecting it into wells where it has the potential to contaminate our water supply.
And it seems that we only started hearing about fracking recently, but my understanding is that it's really been going on since the 1940s, maybe, and it's really extensive around the country. I didn't know it could happen in the oceans too, but how has it affected the environment? You know, I'm looking. It looks like it says as of 2010, it was estimated that 60% of all new gas and oil wells worldwide were being hydraulically fracked, and as of 2012, 2.5 million fracking jobs have been performed worldwide, with more than 1 million in the U.S. Seems to be one of the best-kept environmental secrets.
Right. It's happening everywhere, and it's very alarming, not only because of the toxic chemicals that are used in the fracking process. You know, there is some controversy because oil and gas companies don't have to fully disclose exactly what they're injecting into the earth and then potentially contaminating our water supply with. But what we do know is that at least 25% of those chemicals are known to be cancer-causing. Many more of them are endocrine disruptors, which interfere with development and function in life. So there's lots of highly toxic chemicals being used in the process. It also releases, fracking releases a large quantities of methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. And then it allows access to, you know, these all these fossil fuel deposits that were previously beyond the reach of drilling, but with these new technologies, allowing the companies to go far deeper into the earth and horizontally drilling, they're just able to extract much more than they could before.
So this is leading to contamination of groundwater, and then it's using a lot of fresh water that could be used for other purposes, I guess. And
right. Yeah, in California, that's especially a touchy subject because we already don't have enough water. And, you know, our salmon need it, our farmers need it, and now it seems like the fracking companies want to get it.
And it's been going on, I guess, is it on land in California for decades? Is that the case?
I think it's been going on for a long time in California for decades. But this technology has really accelerated in the last 10 years. And the state doesn't regulate the process. They don't monitor. They don't track fracked wells. So we just don't, it's hard to get a sense exactly how often it's being done and where it's being done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very concerning because if you live, you know, in X county, you want to know exactly what your groundwater is at risk of. And these companies, they don't, you know, they don't have to disclose all these things.
Mm. Yeah. So basically it's creating like all these cracks and the oil and gas seep out of them. And I see that it looks like there's an attempt now, people want to frack for uranium also, which sounds like another bad idea.
Yeah, it sounds like adding insult to injury.
Yeah, really. So it seems like we were taken off guard in California, you know, with fracking off the coast, and I guess the citizens of California can't be blamed because it seemed like maybe even the California Coastal Commission wasn't as aware. I mean, how has this come to light, you know, the revelations that there's fracking off our coast?
Yeah, it is just totally shocking, and it's unbelievable that the Coastal Commission didn't know before, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago that this was happening in our state waters and in our federal waters. There's been at least 12 instances of fracking in state waters off of Long Beach and the same number in federal waters. So it first came to light through, well, there was the AP did a Freedom of Information Act request, and that disclosed the fracking that's happening in federal waters. And then a search on the Frack Focus, which is a voluntary disclosure site run by the oil and gas industry, revealed records of fracking in state waters. And that just happened a couple weeks ago. And, you know, there could be much more. We just don't. Right now we know there are at least 12 frack jobs in state waters, but there could be many more.
And where are the federal waters and where are the state waters of which you speak, and what's the difference?
Well, state waters are within 3 miles of the coastline, and the federal waters extend 3 miles beyond our coastline. And all of these are happening in Southern California in the Santa Barbara Channel.
Okay, so in the Santa Barbara Channel. Did I hear about off Long Beach also, or is that?
Yeah, sorry. Off Long Beach and then Santa Barbara Channel. And so it's pretty. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I'm just wondering if the federal waters, because the federal waters are the ones considered off of Santa Barbara and the state waters off of Long Beach. I'm just wondering if there's a distinction in that, or.
I'm not sure about that. I know they're both in Southern California. My Southern California geography is a bit rusty. but I know it's in federal waters in the Santa Barbara Channel.
Because I'm just wondering who's responsible. Like, the California Coastal Commission, that's mm-hmm. a coastal commission for the state. So if something's happening in state waters, it would be nice if it knew. Federally, I guess we shouldn't be surprised because, you know, who tells us anything? And, you know, they're off in Washington somewhere. But it seems like there's no local awareness.
Well, even in federal waters, the federal entity that is doing this should be alerting the Coastal Commission in order for them to make a determination whether or not this activity is consistent with our Coastal Act. So it is shocking that, that we don't know what's going on in state waters, but even in federal waters, our state government agencies should know what's going on.
So the state is actually supposed to be a safeguard, to what the federal government might do to us, and they're not aware of it, and so apparently they've never stopped anything, right? So whatever the oil industry or the federal government has allowed certainly wasn't blocked by the Coastal Commission.
It certainly appears that way, and I think that they are launching an investigation into the practice, and I hope that they act with all their authority to stop the process and put a moratorium on it at the very least while we figure out what's going on and how often this is occurring and where exactly this is occurring.
Mm. And I would be concerned for marine life then. I mean, who is threatened by this?
Well, California has, one of the most diverse, spectacular marine ecosystems in the world. And it's a fragile ecosystem, so the threats of fracking, there's always a threat of a major blowout or an oil spill, but then also the dumping of these toxic chemicals into the water once they've already been injected into the earth. It poses risk for a whole host of organisms, from marine mammals to sea turtles to fish. One of our main concerns is we just don't know the effects of these chemicals on marine mammals or on any aquatic ecosystems, because there hasn't been any environmental analysis. There hasn't been any analysis under either the California Environmental Protection, the California Environmental Quality Act, or the National Environmental Protection Act. And the Santa Barbara Channel has the largest, I think it's the largest, summer congregation of blue whales.
Emily, could you hold on a second? We have to take a break. We'll have
sure.
A few more minutes with Emily Jeffers coming up with the she's with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're talking about fracking off the coast. Surprise, surprise. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and our programs are archived at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Now broadcasting for 12 years as heard on Air America, and we are nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCN. If you would like to advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products or services, email me. It is bob@goveganradio.com. And I'd like to give a shout-out to Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga, California, 9456 Robert Street. The website is vivalavegangrocery.com, the largest vegan grocery store on Earth with over 6,000 vegan items. And any one of them that you want can be sent to you. Click shop online at vivalavegangrocery.com. Today we're shocked, but it's apparently true. The California coast is all fracked up. Little did we know, just has been revealed that fracking is taking place off the California coast, posing health and environmental hazards. Today we're talking to Emily Jeffers, who is a staff attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. And so, Emily, before the break, we were just talking a little bit about who is under threat, and you said there is a whale colony in the Santa Barbara Channel, and...
Right. The Santa Barbara Channel has the world's densest summer congregation of blue whales. And if there were any sort of release of toxic chemicals into their environment or a catastrophic oil spill like the 1969 Santa Barbara spill, who knows what would happen. At the bottom line, we don't know what's going on out there, and we really need to stop the process. I think the best way to protect our natural resources is to prohibit fracking in our coastal waters. But at a very minimum, we need to have a timeout while state and federal regulators, figure out where this is happening, what's going on, Because right now, I don't think anyone really knows what's happening.
Yeah. How can we make that happen? How can we act to make what you just said, you know, happen?
Well, I think that anyone who's interested in this should call Governor Brown, leave a message, and let your voice be known that you do not want fracking to happen in our coastal waters. You know, let your assemblyman know.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like we need to stop this immediately. I mean, you know, so much for transparency in government. Or, you know, I mean, apparently the oil companies do own us to where they could keep this a secret for so long. I'm surprised there's not a whistleblower in jail for letting us know about this now. You know?
Exactly. We think that there should be a little more transparency as to what's going on. These are our shared resources. As a, you know, as a resident of California, I love going to the beach, and I hate the idea of knowing what could be happening offshore. And
the beach could be carcinogenic, right? I mean, they are using carcinogenic chemicals in the process.
Yeah, we don't know what's happening with the fracking chemicals once they are injected into these wells. We don't know if they're being transported onto land to be injected into onshore wells, or if they're disposing them in the marine environment. So, you know, we need to get a handle on the process.
Has Governor Brown expressed a position on this one way or the other?
As to offshore fracking, no, I'm not aware of any position.
Okay. All right. Well, it makes sense for us to you know, put the pressure on. This is really, it's a shock, and okay, we have to take action. So, thanks, Emily. Anything else you want to? Oh, your website is biologicaldiversity.org. It's biologicaldiversity.org. Anything you want to mention that we didn't address?
Well, one thing I forgot to mention, another risk of fracking, which many of your listeners probably are already aware of, but there are all kinds of seismic risks when you're injecting huge amounts of water into the earth, into an already unstable seismic environment. You know, we know that the next big one is coming here in California, but we don't want to hurry up that process, and fracking has been linked to earthquakes in other parts of the state. So that's just another reason why we should not be fracking off of our coast.
Oh, I had to ask if there was something else to mention, right? I wasn't panicked enough. Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, this is really a call to action. And, you know, I guess, you know, the opposing forces are saying, look, there are economic booms happening from North Dakota to West Texas. But, you know, at what price? Thanks for being with us today, Emily. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks so much. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Coming up, Dixie May, and we'll be talking about fundraising dinner. Professor Gary Francione coming up, Miyoko Shimmer. And greetings once again. It is our second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We have expanded so that we can warn you not to step in that gelatinous mess on the floor there, and you don't slip. It's so disgusting. Oh, it's Jell-O. Ah, okay. Yeah, so you really don't want to let your shoe touch that, right? Ew. Jell-O made from gelatin, derived from the skin and bones of cows and pigs, and you know, sometimes horses have been used to make gelatin. Yuck, huh? And we feed that to the kids? No, we give the kids Cool Cups. Yeah, you can feel good about giving the kids the better vegan alternative that is gelatin-free. Cool Cups made from seaweed, three flavors. Pick up a four-pack. You can get orange, peach mango, black cherry, fat-free, gluten-free, GMO-free, no animal ingredients, no gelatin, naturally low in calories. Learn more about Cool Cups and gelatin by going to cool-cups.net/gelatin. Cool-cups.net gelatin. So there is a big celebration dinner coming up this coming Saturday. It is to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society and a fundraiser to benefit the San Francisco Vegetarian Society and the 14th annual World Veg Festival, which is coming up on Saturday and Sunday, September 28th and 29th, at the County Fair Building in Golden Gate Park. One of my favorite events. I love it so much, especially the MC. How are you, Dixie May, president of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society?
And you can tell your listeners that you're going to be speaking at 10:30 a.m. on September 28th for an hour and a half in the Garden Club room, so they get to meet you in person.
Really? I am?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I better get there early then.
Yeah.
Isn't there an early bird special? Like, isn't it free if you get there early?
From 10 to 10:30, it's free for everyone. Thereafter, it's $10 at the gate.
Mm-hmm. So there, I'm worth the price of no admission right there, right? So we can hang out together and we can talk about vegan, animal liberation activism and how we can avoid the world of so-called humane meat and really help people to improve their lives the way that Dixie May has for over four decades. How long have you been president of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society now, Dixie?
Well, I haven't been president the full length of time. I joined, it was organized in 1968. I joined in 1969. Actually, I had already been a vegetarian for 10 years. And then I heard that someone had started a vegetarian society, and I was quite excited. So I joined it, and there were 30 people. We were quite excited. And then in 1970, I was elected vice president. Fred Baldus was the one who organized it and was the president. And then I became president in 1975 and then retired from president and then became, I retired in 1996. And then I became president again in the year 2000. So here I am.
So how many years would you say you've been president then of SFES?
Well, I can't remember, but I've been involved with the society over that 44 years. It's 45.
So your regime really lasted longer than Fidel Castro, apparently. That's one of the longest terms in office, because you're so wonderful and we love you so much and you're so active and you do such great things. So tell us about what's coming up September 28th and 29th with the World Veg Festival.
Well, we're having a fundraising dinner, but it's going to be great. It's only $55. And the whole thing, we will have really great vegan chefs. Neil Koshiner, and she's the author of several books that were vegan. Now one's Zen Epicure, and the vegan cheese, the artisan vegan cheese. She's also on Miyoko's Kitchen as a co-host of the Vegan Mashup.
Miyoko is going to join us in a few minutes here, and we're talking about a dinner that's coming up this Saturday to benefit the event coming up and the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. And Lisa Brooks Williams is also part of the team that will be providing us with great food there. And
yes, she was the first place winner for Vegan Iron Chef in San Francisco.
This year,
so you got two great chefs.
Yeah, and the winner of Best of Raw New York City in 2010 too. So
right,
you know, so popular on both coasts. So,
it's really a gourmet treat. I mean, a lot of times people think that, you know, a vegetarian or vegan diet has to be dull, but it does not have to be dull with you. People like these two great chefs.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa is on the line with us right now. Are you not, Lisa?
Hey. I'm here.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi, Bob.
Well,
hi, Dixie.
Before people want to get more information, they can look at our website, www.worldvegfestival.com, if they can't find information there, they can call our phone, 415-273-5481, and we're listed in, you know, as the Vegetarian Society of San Francisco, if they didn't have a pencil ready.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. No, Dixie, don't go anywhere. You're not leaving.
Oh, Dixie. Okay. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dixie.
And actually, soon Miyoko will call, and all four of us will be able to talk over each other, and nobody will understand the word we say. So, but with the dinner coming up this Saturday, so what's on the menu, Lisa? And Lisa, by the way, is really well known around the Bay Area, in developing a vegan diet program for Kaiser Permanente, where she also teaches, certified green chef instructor, founder of the Tri-Valley Vegetarian Society, and she caters around the area. So those of us who want to help benefit the San Francisco Vegetarian Society would like to know what's on the menu this coming Saturday, Lisa.
Well, thanks, Bob, for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be able to be a part of the SFVS 45th anniversary fundraiser. I have a beautiful, compassionate menu of delicious finger foods. And so, and I also wanted to add that all the food that I'm preparing, in addition to being vegan, compassionate, health-promoting food, is also gluten-free. And so, because so many people out there are, you know, having allergies to gluten and such, so if you're gluten intolerant, that's no excuse. You can still buy a ticket for the fundraiser. And so let me just tell you a little bit about what I'm preparing. For the raw entry that I'm doing, it is a delicious sunflower tahini miso pate. So, I mean, lots of people tell me it's like one of the most delicious things that they ever had. You can't tell that it's made out of sunflower seeds, and it's delicious, and I'm serving it in an endive boat, and just wonderful. And then I also have created this delicious new appetizer, because I love tamales. Who doesn't love to eat a tamale? But a lot of times eating a tamale can be kind of messy. So I was like, this would be so great if I made it into a ball and you could put it on a toothpick. And so that's what I did. I created these delicious Southwestern flavored tamale balls, and then I created a vegan Chipotle Ranch dipping sauce. So doesn't that sound exciting?
It sounds wonderful. I'm hungry. I'm ready for it.
Well, I've got
Can't wait.
I also have a beautiful spinach and mushroom pate. I'm a big believer in mushrooms that they're very health promoting for the body. So I combine them with some spinach and some other ingredients, and I'm going to serve it on gluten-free crostinis. And the last item, it's kind of a savory muffin that I'm using oats and apples in the muffin, and then I'm filling the centers of the mini muffins with a nice savory, sweet, spicy sage pepper jelly. I also have a new dessert that I created. One of my favorite things is peanut butter. Who doesn't love peanut butter or almond butter? So I created a beautiful peanut butter mousse, and I'm putting it in the little cup with a cacao cookie crust and a nice cacao ganache on top of that. And so, I mean, I think that's pretty yummy stuff. And of course, we'll have Miyoko's famous vegan cheeses and her dessert as well. So it's going to be a wonderful event. They'll all be well fed.
Right.
You know what's really great, Bob? What's really great about this is that it's healthy food, and it tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
So, so often, the people go to these parties and stuff themselves, and it's very unhealthy food. But here we are. Tasty and very good for you.
Yes, it does. It does sound wonderful. And if you're listening, you can be eating, you can be enjoying exactly this menu coming up this Saturday at the 45th anniversary benefit for the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. We're all going to go over to Miyoko's house, aren't we? That's the idea. From 3 to 6 p.m. This will be in San Anselmo, and it's $55. $6 per person, tax deductible, limited space. There'll be live jazz and a silent auction, and all for a very good cause, which is also the World Veg Festival, which takes place at Golden Gate Park, September 28th and 29th. Oh, my birthday. I'll have a birthday party there.
Yay.
It's a birthday party for me. So, Dixie, tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening September 28th and 29th in Golden Gate Park.
Well, it's exciting. We've been doing this for 14 years now, and you've been a part of it a good percentage of that time. Well, we have about 20 speakers over the 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, and they cover all the topics from nutrition to the environment to animal abuse, and even your topic is humane meat and the compromise of animal advocacy. We also have cooking classes, and Lisa will be giving one, and so will
Hold on a second, Dixie and Lisa. We will continue and hopefully be joined by Miyoko on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Stay with us. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. And today we are getting ready for the celebration dinner, the San Francisco Vegetarian Society 45th anniversary fundraiser to help with the costs of the World Veg Festival, which is an amazing two-day event at the County Fair Building in Golden Gate Park, September 28th and 29th. I am fortunate enough to MC the event in the auditorium, and you'll love it there with all the speakers and the food sampling, and it's just a wonderful event. And so with this Saturday's fundraiser, we've been talking to Dixie May, president of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, and Chef Lisa Brooks-Williams, who is participating in putting together an amazing menu. And actually, we're all just going to go over to Miyoko Shinner's house, and who is herself a renowned vegan chef and author and blogger. You may have seen her on your local PBS station on Vegan Mashup. And people in San Francisco remember long ago the Now and Zen Bistro. Her recipe won, you know, for best cookie on United Airlines, I think it was. So for quite a while, she was like baking cookies by the thousands. And remember the Unturkey and Hip Whip, and the first book, The Now and Zen Epicure, re-released. Released in 1990, and then now re-released a decade later, the new Now and Zen Epicure, and the wonderful book of artisan cheeses, and that's really a bestseller, artisan vegan cheese, and also the book Japanese Cooking, Contemporary and Traditional. Well, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us, Miyoko. Take care.
God, Bob, nice. You make me sound like a... I've done so much.
And apparently you have, you know, like just the number of cookies you've baked, I think, probably puts you in the Guinness Book of Vegan
Records. My arm got tired stirring the dough.
Yeah. How many cookies per day was that for the airlines?
It was something for a while before 9/11, it was like almost 10,000 a day.
10,000 cookies a day.
Yeah.
Do you ever want to see a chocolate chip cookie again? Or
No, thank you. No, thank you. But I've made plenty for my kids, so...
Ah, okay. So tell us what's and by the way, I was just so impressed with your vegan presentation at the World Veg Festival. I mean, you just really everything you said was just so inspiring and true. So I would encourage people to check out Miyoko. I mean, I gave one of the best presentations.
Yeah, let me just tell you, Bob, she'll be at 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. on Saturday the 28th. So
It won't just be me. I'll be with Priscilla Farrell of Friends of Animals this year, and we're going to be talking about food that is similar to what apes and chimps eat. So it's going to be kind of fun, and we're going to talk about saving orangutan habitat and what you can do in place of palm oil.
Great. Oh, yeah.
Do you
have a hint, though, on the palm oil thing? That's of interest. Does it stay a secret till then, or can you give us...
What do you mean, a secret about what I'm eating?
What can replace palm oil? You know, we want to replace palm oil.
Well, coconut oil is definitely a better option. But, you know, a lot of the vegan butters in the market use palm oil.
Right.
And so I'll be demonstrating a vegan butter substitute that you can make at home that's really delicious. And we're really not sure what all the other recipes are. That's going to be a secret. Priscilla and I have to figure it out. But
okay, because we do want to move away from palm oil to save the orangutans and habitat and all. So, okay. So, and by the way, your website has amazing recipes, too. So people keep asking me, you know, they say, all right, you've convinced me. I want to go vegan. Now, what do I do? Well, go to miyoko.com, miyoko.com, or artisanveganlife.com. What's on the menu this Saturday? What's happening?
You know, I'm actually, it's going to be fun working with Lisa, and I'm going to be doing a vegan cheese platter. People seem to love vegan cheese. That is the hardest thing for people to give up, transitioning from either an omnivore or a vegetarian diet to a vegan diet. So I'll have all kinds of cheeses out there, including my newly inoculated camembert it's inoculated with the real mold for camembert. So that's fantastic, because I'll have that there. And then I will be making vegan eclairs. And that's a recipe that it's just coming out in the new Veg News. I just wrote an article on French cuisine, and I have eclairs there. So I've sort of unlocked the secret for making a really crispy eclair that's hollow on the inside. So that's one of those, you know, recipes that people have wanted to have veganized for a long time. So so I'll be making the stuff at the front end and the back end, and Lisa will be making all the lovely appetizers in between.
Okay. Well, may I ask all of you to hold on just for a few more minutes? We'll spend a few minutes together before we have animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Oh, if acupuncture for your dog interests you, contact the Oceana Pet Hospital, AAHA accredited, open 7 days a week at 711 Oceana Boulevard in Pacifica, California. Call 650-355-6600. You hear that, Daisy, my beloved Chihuahua? And my other beloved Chihuahua, Daisy. Yes, I am now living with two Chihuahuas named Daisy. The owner and primary veterinarian, Dr. Nia, DVM, PhD, completed the acupuncture course of the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. And traditional Chinese medicine looks at acupuncture as a means to help the body heal itself, correcting energy imbalances, enhancing circulation, stimulating the nervous system, used for thousands of years in veterinary medicine. Contact oceanapet.com, oceanapet.com. Just have a few minutes left. We've been talking to Dixie May, who's president of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. And also, we're talking about a benefit dinner happening this Saturday at Miyoko Shinner's house, who's one of the chefs. We talked about the menu for this Saturday, and she and Lisa Brooks Williams are putting together one of the most amazing. Well, you can be there. And by the way, if you missed any of it, the program is archived at goveganradio.com. You can be there this Saturday. We're going to go to Miyoko's house in San Anselmo. And for information, look at the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, sfvs.org. It's $55 per person, tax deductible, and entertainment, and great things going on. maybe Dixie and then Miyoko and then Lisa, you can take just a minute or two to fill us in on anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't, and also just a quick second on why you're a vegan.
Oh, well, Dixie is here.
Dixie.
Yeah. Well, I first became a vegetarian because I didn't want to eat animals, and I was only 5 years old, but I wasn't able to convert that quickly because my parents wouldn't let me. But I became a vegetarian when I was about 24 or so, and then, so I've been a vegetarian 54 years, and 34 as a vegan, because then I realized more and more that it was unhealthy as well as not compassionate to be just a vegetarian. So that's my quick story for vegan. And what I would like to add is that I forgot to mention that Lisa is going to be doing her demo on Sunday, 10:30 to 11:30. So people can come and learn how to do some of her recipes.
Mm-hmm,
and
great.
That will be at the World Veg Festival, September 29th, at mm-hmm. the County Fair Building. And all that information is on our website, sfvs.org.
Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. wonderful. And Miyoko?
Well, I'm vegan for health of myself, the animals, and the planet. So it's for all three of those.
Right, and how long have you been vegan now?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I've lost in a decade.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, a long time.
And we thank you for proving that vegan food is the best. It's the best, right?
I think it is the best because, you know, how can it be good if you're hurting animals and the environment in the process?
And yourself, you know, making yourself sick,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Yes, I might add, you know, I'm almost 80 years old now, and most people my age are, you know, pretty sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not only not sick, I'm just filled with energy to put on these events, and I take no medications. I have no problems.
Right,
so
and you'll
happy.
Be dancing. You'll be dancing around the festival on the 28th and 29th,
and
yeah, you will be. And Lisa,
yes. Well, I went veg in 2004, and because of something that I heard John Robbins say, he said, "How can you call one animal food and the other animal your pet?" And that really made me think because I'm a dog mom, and I have three dogs that I love as my own children, and it started really making me think. And I mean, he's absolutely right. How can you say, you know, a cow is less than a dog or a cat or a parrot? You just can't. And so then I started teaching veg cooking and vegan cooking in 2005, and I haven't looked past. I haven't looked back. My mission, my ministry is to veducate as many people as possible, and I'm so grateful to have the outlet of teaching the plant-based diet program at Kaiser, and that is a you know, that platform is growing and expanding, and I'm so grateful for the San Francisco Vegetarian Society and Dixie for believing in me and helping me to do what I love to do, which is to veducate. And I'm also honored to be doing this fundraiser with Miyoko, and just so many wonderful veg people will be there. And even if you're not veg, you can still come to the fundraiser and have some delicious, compassionate, health-promoting vegan food. So I hope to see everybody there.
Okay, that's this coming Saturday. I want to thank you all for being with us today. Dixie, Miyoko, and Lisa, we look forward to your fine cuisine this Saturday and the festival, the 28th and 29th. For information, go to sfvs.org, as in San Francisco Vegetarian Society. And right now, I would like to welcome for animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. Well, who else would it be? But Professor Gary Francione, how are you today, Gary?
I'm very well, Bob. I have a question for you. You have two dogs named Daisy?
I have two dogs. Yes, another rescue dog showed up today. Daisy, the love of my life for many months now here, has been, you know, my Daisy. And then today somebody had to give up a Daisy. So now, as I said in the beginning of the show, it's like the Bob Newhart show with, you know, two brothers named Daryl. Hi, I'm Daryl, and this is my brother named Daryl. So it's not that.
Stopped by and gave you and asked you to care for a dog named Daisy. It's not that you named them both Daisy, because I was going to say that would be sort of a failure of imagination.
Exactly. As I said, you know, it's like we didn't say, wow, Daisy is the best name. We can't do better than that. All future dogs will be named Daisy. You know, it's like, so now we'll just have to see. I guess anything we do, both of them will be doing at the same time, because they're both Daisy. So...
Well, anyway, I thought I would offer some thoughts tonight, and I'd also like your reaction, Bob, to the notion of what do we mean when we say vegan? And, you know, because I frequently get this question, can you say you're a vegan if you just eat plant foods? Is that enough? Or what if you're a vegan for environmental? Or what if you don't eat animal products for environmental reasons? Are you a vegan, et cetera? And I think that some of these questions are interesting. I think sometimes we can get lost in the taxonomy unnecessarily. But I think, you know, the way I use vegan, and I think this is fair in terms of the way Donald Watson thought about it, although he used it in different senses. But I think that what he was trying to get to in 1944 when he coined the term was somebody who didn't eat, use, or eat, wear, or use animal products. So although he did talk about a vegan diet, and I want to talk about that in a second, he did talk about a vegan diet. When he talked about being a vegan, I think he was meaning it as a more encompassing term to reflect not just not eating animal products, but not wearing leather, wool, silk, fur, and also, to the extent possible, not using animal products. I mean, we can all not use animal products in the shampoos that we purchase, or the other, you know, the toothpastes and other sorts of things that we buy for personal care use. You can't avoid it completely because there are animal products in road surfacing and in, you know, you can get a car without leather seats, but there are going to be glues that are used in the car that have animal ingredients in them. But, so some of these things you can't avoid. There are animal byproducts in plastics that are used for computers and just about everything else. This is the problem of killing 58 billion, 57 billion of them, of land animals, not counting aquatic animals, every year for food, is that you have lots and lots of byproducts in slaughterhouse products that aren't being utilized, so they get used they're cheap, they cost very little, so they get into everything,
even in organic farming. So
absolutely. I mean, you know, several years ago, I thought I would do something to make the lawn look nicer, and I didn't want to use pesticides, obviously, and chemicals and stuff, because they're not good. They're not good at all for anybody, including the things that the little creatures that live in the soil. And so I called around and talked to some of these people who did organic, non-lethal weed control and things like that. And they're all using animal products. They're all using bone and blood and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. It'd be great if we could get all veganic vegetables, but unless you're growing them yourself or you have access to some of the very small amount of that's produced.
Yeah, and there are some veganic farms and
sure.
Along those lines, but I hope there's growth in that area at some point.
Oh yeah, no, I think that is something. That's something I'm very, very interested in, is encouraging growth in that area so that we can be even more consistent. But when I talk about being a vegan, what I mean is we don't eat meat, dairy, eggs, honey, any animal products. And we don't wear any wool leather, silk, fur. I mean, it's not just fur that's a problem. I mean, leather is a problem, wool's a problem, silk's a problem. And we don't use them to the extent that we can avoid using them, to the extent that we have to purchase things that we can purchase without those things, without animal ingredients. We are obligated to do that. Now, is it okay to use vegan when we're talking about a diet? And I think it's perfectly fine to say somebody has a vegan diet, by which is meant that person avoids eating any animal foods. I think it's perfectly acceptable to talk about having a vegan diet. Again, it's different from being a vegan in that, you know, you can have people who have vegan diets, but then who, you know, wear animal products or otherwise use animal products. I hear the music. The music
yes.
of death. Is that music?
It's the music of a break coming up, but we'll come back with you and spend a few more minutes afterward with Professor Gary Francione today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Oh, it looks like Daisy and Daisy, the chihuahuas, want to go for a walk. So in about 5 minutes, we have about 5 minutes left for animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. I only adopt dogs named Daisy. That's just a personality trait I have. Sorry. So before the break, Gary,
yeah.
You were differentiating between being on a vegan diet and you know, being a vegan.
For some reason, I don't understand this. There are people who get really upset about this both ways, in terms of there are people who, if you talk about a vegan diet, get really upset and say, you can't talk about veganism as a diet. Which it just doesn't make sense to me. On the other hand, you know, I certainly believe veganism is beyond a diet. But, you know, the idea that if you talk about a vegan diet, this makes people extremely upset. And then there are some people out there who think you should only talk about it in terms of a diet. And that, I think, is, as I mentioned, is just absolutely wrong. I mean, I think you've got to differentiate between being a vegan and being on a vegan diet. And by the way, I think being on a vegan diet, you can be on a vegan diet for a wide number of reasons. I mean, I have yet to meet anybody who is consistently on a vegan diet for anything other than an ethical reason. I mean, you know, there are people who are primarily, you know, have a primarily plant-based diet for health reasons or for environmental reasons, but I really have never known anybody in my life who is consistently on a plant-based diet and doesn't eat any animal foods for any reason other than morality. And I think of veganism in terms of the notion of not eating, wearing, or using animals as a moral notion. I mean, it doesn't make any sense except as a moral notion. And I think, you know, now, you know, in the new book that Anna Charlton and I did, Eat Like You Care, we talk about a vegan diet. And the reason why we do that is because this book is written primarily for people who are thinking about animal ethics, but are not, and who think of veganism and a vegan diet as an extreme sort of thing. And the idea is to say, well, look, you know, a vegan diet follows from what you already believe about animals, that you shouldn't impose suffering on them without a very good reason. And, you know, if you believe that, then you're committed to not eating any animals. And we have a section at the end of the book about, you know, where does that take you? If you buy that argument, does that mean that, you know, you can't do lots of other things? And we leave it with the reader saying, well, you know, you'll work that out. But the most important thing is you stop eating them. And I really believe that, you know, although veganism is not eating, wearing, or using animals, it starts with eating. If you know, as long as you're eating them, nothing changes. Once you stop eating them for moral reasons, everything changes and everything falls into place. And you know, so it's going to be a very rare instance, if it ever occurs, where somebody, you know, says, gee, I cannot wear any animal products, but I'm going to continue to eat them. Whereas if somebody says, you know, if somebody says, I'm not going to eat them for moral purposes, then it doesn't take them long to come to the conclusion that they should stop wearing leather and they should stop buying toothpaste or shampoo or other products that have animal ingredients in them. So I think that that's the really, you know, that's the diet thing, the eating. Look, eating is the most important issue. This is the issue we all ought to be focused on. The number of animals that we use for everything else is minuscule in comparison to the number of animals we kill to eat. And we've got, this is what we've really got to focus on, is eating, and why we have a moral obligation not to eat animal foods. Once people see that, once people see that they can't justify eating animal foods, everything else falls into place. Until they see that, nothing makes sense, which is one of the reasons why, by the way, I think single-issue campaigns are a bad idea. And you know, I mean, because, look, as long as people are eating animals, then the things that we focus on in single-issue campaigns aren't going to make a hell of a lot of sense to them, because their animal exploitation is an integral part of their life. And so if you start focusing them on particular discrete things and say, well, you know, you shouldn't really do those sorts of things, there's really no context for them to reject those things as morally wrong, given the eating of animals, which is pervasive in everyone's life. So veganism really is, and a vegan diet is really the key to it all. Once you get people to see that nonviolence means watching what you stick in your mouth and not just what comes out of your mouth, that's really the key to everything. Go to the website, www.abolitionistapproach.com. And I look forward to talking to you next week, and perhaps you'll have a third dog named David at that time.
Could happen. Thank you so much, Gary, for being with us today.
A pleasure.
Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com.